Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, and this is Chris Cherniak sitting right next to me. And we are broadcasting live today from the Whole Foods Cafe here in Kimball Junction in honor of the Whole Foods 5% Day, where 5% of the proceeds of sales are donated to KPCW for all they do in town as a nonprofit.
Thank you, Whole Foods.
That's right. So sitting here with us now is Rick Broth, KPCW's own correspondent who has years of history with the Sundance Film Festival. How long have you been covering the film festival?
How long has it been going? Well, first of all, it's unusual to have me on This Green Earth because environmentally sensitive is not the word that comes to mind when people see me.
But, fair enough.
Yes, but
they have other terms for you.
Right? Yes, but I have been fortunate enough to have some level of little involvement with the festival, even going back to the days when it was kind of in embryo form in Salt Lake. When it was back in the late 70s, they had two festivals down there where it was mostly a retro festival where they played old American classics and had a special program of what were called then regional films or independent films, and they gathered together a few flotsam and jetsam people from Salt Lake to judge the films every year, and I was fortunate enough to be in that group. The preliminary jury, yes, that saw 20 or 30 pictures, and so it was a very fortunate experience to be there. And in those days, it was informal enough that you could hang with. To date, I don't hang with celebrities, but
right.
Back in '78, I did actually was able to hang a little bit with George Romero, Mr. Zombie movie.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so things have changed since then.
Yes.
You're no longer judging films formally. You judge them independently.
Informally, yeah. But it was kind of it was very interesting to witness the kind of synergy that went on in the early days. One of the films that first year that we did decide to put in the festival was a Texas film from a guy named Eagle Pinnell, who is now passed on. But there are some press reports that said at that first festival that Redford did see this picture called The Whole Shooting Match, and he had this kind of epiphany of that this is pretty interesting. It would be nice if we could have some sort of an institute to help out these guys. So that was in part the spark,
right.
That led to the Sundance Institute doing the labs in the canyon to help nurture young filmmakers. And the institute to start out with for a few years was not the same thing as the festival. The festival had kind of different management, but they were kind of there was relationships between the two entities. And then in 85, Sundance Institute took over the festival.
Right.
So have you always been covering the festival from for a radio station, a radio point of view, or were you involved in film itself in the early days?
Not as a critic, which is...
Yeah.
The filmmakers probably say that's the most useless, useless.
Somebody has to do it.
Useless role in the whole chain, but when I first came up to Park City and working for one of the two papers in town, we had the Park Record and the newspaper in those days, and I came up to work for the newspaper, and it's sort of my superstitious belief. I moved up in 80, and the festival decided to move here in January of 81. So I like to think it followed me.
Absolutely.
They'll never admit it, though.
They will not. But
behind the scene, they probably acknowledge you.
I don't know.
So, how the festival's obviously changed over the years. What festivals maybe stand out to you as being kind of the high watermark of this institution?
I don't know if festivals in particular stand out. Maybe there's one that kind of stands out as kind of, it stood out for me as kind of the bad luck festival, because of my bad luck and things that were happening at the festival. I think 99 just didn't. There's some things going on. 99 was the year that they didn't have the Eccles Center then, so they were still trying to cram people in for very popular movies into the Holiday Village Cinemas, when it was the Threeplex then. And there was a relatively notorious incident with the crowd waiting to get into the pimp documentary.
Of all films.
Yes, of course. Then they get pretty gnarly. I think that was also the year that some piece of equipment at the village fell into the audience and hit somebody. My bad luck. It was the year that I said, the midnight show at the Egyptian. I don't know if I want to get to that one, and I missed it and I got shut out. I said, well, it's no big deal. I mean, you know, so you miss the premiere of the Blair Witch Project.
Who's ever going to bother with this film anyway?
Yeah, that one. That's my famous Sundance story, the one that got away.
The one that got away.
That I was not there for.
So what are some of the strangest things that you've seen at Sundance? I mean, I think about last year when, you know, there was a camel walking down Main Street that was all over the news. I'm sure there are stories like this every few years.
Well, I usually don't see the strange things. I usually hear about them later. But the camel and about maybe 10 years or so ago, the naked PETA people that were protesting.
Sure.
I don't know if you recall that story.
Yeah.
They were going kind of semi-nude on the street, and which is a real sacrifice for Part City in January.
That's commitment to a cause.
What about films then? Tell us what films have kind of stood out with you.
Memorable films. I can say that I think I wasn't at the first screening. I think it was the second screening of a picture in '92 that nobody was paying much attention to. It was about this group of bank robbers called Reservoir Dogs. And afterward, this hyper kid named Tarantino came out, and he just said, "Oh, I'm bleeping excited." And just using Tarantino language that you can't repeat on the screener.
Right, inappropriate for radio.
Yes. Then went to, a couple of years later, going to a what it was described as a three-hour documentary about, you know, basketball players. And so I thought, oh, wow, well, that'll be like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be Hoop Dreams, which was one of the films that redefined the documentary landscape, and utterly, you know, just riveting. The cliche about, you know, the three... If a three-hour movie is good, you don't notice that it's 3 hours, and that was one of those. Steve James, one of the co-directors of that, is back this year, and I think he's doing the documentary on Roger Ebert. And that's another memorable one. Is the festival in '82. We occasionally see Roger Ebert, and it was one of the great festival experiences. Is that, you know, Ebert was not just a great critic, but he was wonderful as a teacher, and he had this kind of demonstration that he would take students through. He had this kind of special projector which. In the early 80s, I guess it had kind of the capabilities that you might attribute now to a DVD. a little projector that could fast forward a picture, slow-mo, reverse, freeze, back and forth, and tape people. And he would give this lecture on the visual nuances of film, and then show Citizen Kane or something on this little special projector, and you could see things about what Wells was doing in the foreground and what special effect he was doing in this scene, even though it wasn't obviously a special effect, but
right.
It was so subtle. And we only got through about the first 20 minutes or so of Citizen Kane, and it was just an awesome experience.
That's incredible. It's like sort of the early version of some of the panels and the workshops that they do today.
Yes. Well, even in the, I think even in the first year, they did some seminars and things, but it's much more, you know, elaborate now. I think they have the seminars in the Yarrow Hotel, and in that first year in 81, when it was the first year that was a full-fledged festival devoted to independent film, was the theaters were the Egyptian and the Holiday Village, and which was basically three screens then instead of four, and I think they would show some in the hotel. And of course now we have like what, 6 to 8 venues just here,
right?
And then we also have Salt Lake and Ogden, and so.
What are you planning to see? What are you planning to see this year?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's. I sort of go into it. I sort of willfully go into it a little blind because I just want to go see, well, what's this documentary about? And there are a couple of standouts that'd be interesting to get to. The one, To Be Takei, about George Takei. And I'm just going to simply, I think the audience will probably just go to it just to see Takei show up.
Yes.
And go, oh my.
Exactly.
Yes. And the documentary about Mitt,
right.
Which is interesting because it was done by Greg Whiteley, who a few years ago had done I don't know if he established a Mormon connection with a documentary he did years ago about a member of the old rock group, the New York Dolls, who the guy Killer Kane, who afterward converted to Mormonism.
Hmm.
And I don't know if he got some connection through that to let the Romneys document the thing, but it's a story about Mitt's quest for the presidency that started with a family meeting in Park City. So,
homegrown roots for that film.
Yes, and let's see what else we got. I'm interested in seeing the, even though I'm not a sports fan, but it's the Battered Bastards of Baseball.
Really?
Because it is about. It ties in with one of my favorite things, which is I love character actors. And it turns out that this is about a guy named Bing Russell, who played supporting roles in the 50s and 60s in Hunt, every TV show in the world. And but on the side, he established an independent minor league team in Portland, the Portland Mavericks. And so this was like the original Bull Durham, and and he's Ben Russell is maybe best known as the father of a guy named Kurt, who was Kurt Russell, who was, you remember, you know, Kurt Russell was a well-known child actor even in the 60s, even before he made it as an adult. So
right.
It's interesting to see that this intersection between kind of Hollywood people and the world of baseball, and it'll be fun to see that one. And,
so,
and then I'd love to go see the midnight shows too.
Yeah. So how many films do you see on average?
I wish I could brag and steal Destiny Gross's numbers and do 30 to 45. But actually, it's if KPCW let me sleep for 2 days straight afterwards, I'd just go to just. Go and try to get, you know, that 35 or 40 movies. My my average, shamefully, is probably more like 15 to 25.
Still pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, Rick Bruff, one of KPCW's finest, thank you very much for coming on and sharing with us your experiences at Sundance. And,
yeah.
And we'll see you around town.
That's okay. I could have told one story, but since we're in Whole Foods, it's probably not a good setting for the...
Back in studio.
We'll tell you later.
All right. Yeah. Let's take one more break for some underwriters. We come back, it'll be time to wrap up. It's This Screen Earth. Stay tuned.
This is Alex Knapp from the law offices of Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, a longtime supporter of KPCW. Jones, Waldo has been serving clients in Summit County since 1875. We can be reached at 435-647-5975 or on the web at joneswaldo.com.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage services and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Recycling in Summit County is improving. The trick to remember? Recyclable materials go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. It's time to wrap up. Hey, let's thank, among other things, our underwriters.
That's
who
right.
Help support our show every week. They include Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanity's Restore.
Rocky Mountain Power.
San Francisco Design.
And, of course, Prudential Utah Real Estate.
And, of course, again, we want to thank all our guests today.
That's right.
Michael Rosado Bennett, director of Alive Inside. Todd Miller, director of Dinosaur 13. Mark Grieco, director of Marmato.
And also we'd like to thank some of the Sundance folks that joined us. Trevor Groff, the director of programming for Sundance, and Jerem Rowland, the manager of the film music program.
And, of course, Travis Harkness. He's the marketing specialist at Whole Foods. Thanks for stopping by and chatting us up about what Whole Foods is doing for their 5% day. And, again, thanks for supporting KPCW.
That's right. You can always find us on Facebook, find us online, and email us your thoughts and your comments.
And join us in a couple Tuesdays. We won't be on next Tuesday, but the 28th. We're going to have Dr. Deborah Davis on. She used to be with the National Institute of Health, epidemiologist, fascinating woman. We'll see you in a couple Tuesdays. Thanks again.
This is KPCW.
Additional funding for news and information on KPCW has been provided by University of Utah Healthcare, located at Redstone, 435-658-9200, redstone.uofuhealth.org.
Local programming all day, only in Park City, only on KPCW, 91.9 FM in Park City and the Heber Valley, 88.1 FM in Colville and Camas. This is KPCW, Park City.